It's time for Branding Business, the only show that brings branding experts and corporate executives together to explore how branding your business can improve both your top-line growth and bottom-line performance. Brought to you by Rikus Baird. And now, here's your host.
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is John Christensen, and it's welcome to Branding Business, sponsored by Rikus Baird, one of the most successful independently owned brand strategy firms focused on branding business. Joining me for this inaugural show of Branding Business are the three principals at Rikus Baird, Ray Baird, Alan Brew, and Ryan Rikus. Welcome, gentlemen.
Hello.
Thanks, John.
Welcome.
Ryan, let's start off by having you tell us about Rikus Baird. Tell us a little bit about your clients, and how did you come into being?
Well, sure, John. Yeah, Rikus Baird's a brand strategy firm that helps companies grow. And we do this by clarifying their unique promise or distinction, which is our definition of a brand. So in essence, we link a business and brand strategy together and then make a deep emotional connection to the brand. So once that brand promise has been clarified, we make sure it's deeply understood and adopted first with the internal team there before we reach to the target market. Then we help our clients with a go-to-market strategy to drive growth. So we've been around for about 16 years. We've built over 250 brands. Our focus is on B2B, and we have a deep expertise in the areas of energy, technology, medical, industrial, and the service sectors. So a little bit about our individual backgrounds. Myself, I come from a creative background. I started a creative agency in 1985 in the early 90s. I met Ray, and we had a very similar vision for what we wanted to accomplish in our lives, and he comes from a more of a strategic background, both on the corporate side, as well as he was working at an ad agency at the time. And so we decided to form Rikus Baird then in 1994. And about 4 years ago, we had the benefit of meeting Alan Brew, who has now become a principal of the firm. And Alan has a deep background of working in journalism at the Financial Times, running some of the largest brand strategy firms in the world, including Landor. Started his own firm, Addison, San Francisco, and now we have a great benefit of having him here at RB. So in addition to that, we have a great team of strategists, analysts, brand managers, and creatives here at Rikus Baird.
That's outstanding. Ray, let's get down to business, or branding business, to be more specific. Now, the title of this show has a nice double entendre. It's about the business of branding, but it's also about branding businesses. Talk a little bit about that concept behind the show. What will it be about?
Well, it's going to be about a few different things, but the central theme is all around growing business and how brands can help companies do that. We wanted to create, and there hasn't been one up until today, a place where executives, people on the agency side, or people that are working on brands, a great place to go to learn all the newest things that are happening from a brand perspective, and specifically within the B2B marketplace. So what we wanted to do was to bring on, and to do some really great case studies. We're going to have speakers from companies, local companies, such like Hogue, as you had mentioned, John. We'll bring in even, other companies from American Airlines to local technology companies and have them talk about how they've grown their business and how brands can help them do that. So that we want this to be a place where people can come learn, see and hear the best, practices and have a real good dialogue about what's happening in the world of branding.
Now, Alan, business-to-business is Rikus Baird's primary focus. Let's be clear. Talk about the difference between business-to-consumer branding and business-to-business branding.
Well, that's an interesting question, John. Thank you for asking it. The problem with branding in our business is that it's such a polluted term that nobody really is sure what branding is. To some people, branding can be advertising, it can be public relations, it can be packaging. And I think our clients, particularly in business-to-business, think they don't need a brand. If they think of branding, they think of Starbucks, they think of McDonald's, they think of Apple. And they have branding companies approaching them with all kind of airy-fairy notions of building their brand and not talking in relevant terms about their business model, how they actually make things and go to market with products. So they see the whole issue of branding, one, confusing, and two, irrelevant. So it's important for us to understand our client's business. As Ryan said earlier, we focus on specific industries, and it's important for us to know those businesses, know those industries in depth, so we're not learning at our client's expense. We focus on energy, technology, industrial, and healthcare. We know those industries intimately, and so we can go in and really bring value extremely quickly in terms of how to bring value around a client's business. Now, in terms of business to business, how is it different to business to consumer? Many branding companies won't be able to tell you that difference. We know it intimately. Business to business companies are different in that they have different business models, they have longer times to market, longer product development cycles, more complex routes to market and channels to market, relationships with distributors, and it's an entirely different proposition than business to consumer, which is high visibility, high volume, low margin, often about price points and packaging and point of purchase. Business to business people know this. They think that branding is about business to consumer. It fundamentally is not. The value we can bring is, one, understanding that difference, and two, understanding the how our clients' businesses function, and then bring real value around that.
All right. Thanks, Alan. Now, Ryan, how should business people and B2B marketers be thinking about branding? What is it and what isn't it?
Well, maybe it's easier to start in what is it not. And that is, and Alan mentioned, people sometimes get confused by the definition of branding. Some people think it's a logo or a tagline or an ad or social media. Probably the logo or the tagline is what typically people think of. But reality is, those are some touch points that represent what the brand stands for and how people experience it. But the brand is much bigger than that. It's really the entire reputation of an organization. So there are many, many different touch points, and it's our job to help our clients clarify what the brand stands for and then how those touch points are experienced in the pre-purchase decision process, the purchasing process, and then post-purchase. So in essence, branding serves a business purpose. It is not, although it is not owned by the marketing department. Our viewpoint is the CEO must own the brand. It's the company's most valuable asset, and therefore it cannot be expected to be communicated solely through a marketing department. The entire executive team needs to buy into the concept of branding and make sure it's experienced and delivered consistently across all those different platforms I mentioned. So once again, branding serves a business purpose. It really must embody the true essence of the business and what makes the business relevant to the target audience. So that's the two components there. What makes you unique? And then you have to be relevant to your target audience, or what's the point? Who cares? So brand clarity is critical, and it's essential to the success of any business of any size. It really doesn't matter. Branding, the concept of branding applies to every size business out there. And our viewpoint, it's especially important to the B2B marketplace. Kind of picking up where Alan left off there, the reality is business to business is different than consumer side. The purchasing decisions are typically much more in the area of high stakes. They're not commodity. They're very expensive. So these are big time decisions. And so that takes time. The sales cycle is longer, and relationships need to be built. People need to understand, the prospect needs to understand the concept behind the offering, because once again, it's typically more expensive and very, very important to the purchasing company. As well as these multiple channels of distribution add complexity to it. So that's an important part that we understand deeply, and we make sure that the brand is adopted internally, communicated very, very well throughout the channels of distribution. Training is an important component of it. And that's, if that is done properly, then ultimately the consumer, the end user, experiences the brand in a consistent manner. So since the brand's the most important and valuable asset of the company, we need to work with our clients to make sure it's monitored, protected, nurtured, and evolved in order to make it truly embody the values of the business going forward.
Ray, define for our listeners a couple of terms that Ryan just mentioned, brand strategy and brand awareness.
Yeah, absolutely. I think brand awareness is one that everybody, it's pretty intuitive. You know, all the brands have to, you know, to be an overall, you know, aware, and you can, you know, measure that in, you know, in a lot of different ways. The more important question is, you know, what are you going to be, you know, known for? What are you going to be aware for? And that's where brand strategy is kind of all the other components that, that make that happen. It's around, for corporations, you know, the right architecture, the right kind of master brand or, you know, house of brands kind of strategy. It's about overall positioning. It's about messaging and creative and all of those things together. But the biggest thing is kind of trying to figure out what to be known for. When you get in the consideration set from a business standpoint, what is that one thing that you want to own? And that's the big kind of question. For those of you that have seen, you know, the movie City Slickers, there's a great scene in that movie that I think that business people should all watch. It's Billy Crystal, and he's riding next to, you know, Curly, and Billy Crystal asks him, you know, the simple question about, you know, what's the secret of life? And Curly puts up his finger, and he goes, what's that, your finger? He goes, no, it's one thing. And he goes, well, what's that one thing? And Curly says, well, that's what you got to figure out. And for most corporations, they really need to spend the time to figure out what is going to be that one thing. And that's a difficult thing to figure out. You've got to understand the marketplace. You've got to understand competitors, who owns what, what's available, and what's going to resonate with the overall, you know, the audience there. So when we're building, you know, corporate brands, we like to have our own criteria. And it's a good criteria for you to ask yourself about your own company. One, is it relevant? Do people really care? Two, is it believable? You can't put out an overall brand promise that people aren't going to, you know, think that is true. And the last part is, you know, is it defendable? Over, you know, over time and years, if you're going to invest that much money in an overall corporate brand, I think you've got to get those three things right.
Outstanding. Now, here's a question for all three of you. Due to the global recession, the world has changed over the last few years. Industries and companies are undergoing significant change. How are you helping organizations navigate through this change? Alan, I'll start with you.
Well, I'm not so sure the world has changed. I think people are just more cautious. Obviously, the financial shock and the credit shock badly impacted the economy, and then businesses battened down the hat and just looked to survive over the past 2 years. They're coming back cautiously. We saw today some fantastic manufacturing figures, which does provide some evidence that the economy is coming back strongly. But we've got a lot of uncertainty globally. With, you know, the events in Egypt now are, you know, threatening to impact the economic recovery because of imports and exports. So we're living in a global economy, and what happens in one part of the world impacts us here in the U.S. So people, and we're living in uncertain times. I mean, the world is in flux. So it's not just a case of how well is the U.S. doing. It's the market on a global basis. So we're living in a different kind of world, but business is coming back cautiously. People are looking for how they can reconnect with the marketplace, reconnect with their employees. They've been through some tough times, laid people off. There's a lot of confusion about what the company stands for. And our clients are asking us to help them in terms of reconnecting with the market, reconnecting with customers, reconnecting with employees, and aligning all three around where they're going as a business and what they want to achieve. It's rebuilding trust and confidence, which is the watchword of today.
Absolutely. Ryan, what are your thoughts about how you're helping organizations navigate through this change?
Well, I actually think that there has been a significant shift that has occurred with many of our clients. Some of them, their business models have had to change considerably. Sometimes we have one client where their legacy business is rapidly declining, and they either need to change and therefore create a new opportunity or just ride that into the sunset. Well, obviously their decision is to continue with that legacy business, but we've also helped them identify a new sweet spot in the market, and then basically create a new company, a spinoff, to address the opportunities in the market. So many of our clients have experienced significant changes with the economy, with their value proposition, and therefore it creates new opportunities. And there are others that just the timing right now is right, and they anticipate a different reality in the future, and they've been working on it and building it. One example would be Hoag. which will be a guest in a future episode here. And maybe I can share with you just briefly what they're accomplishing. They are a very successful organization located here in Newport Beach, California. Ranked by consumers for 14 years as the number one hospital in Orange County. The challenge, though, is they're seen as a hospital, and yet there's so much more than that. So they approach, and we have helped them over the last year in the effort to reposition the company beyond a hospital overlooking the bluffs of Newport Beach. They're very proud of that hospital. They have great facilities there, but the reality is there's so much more than that. And so this is an opportunity to clarify what this great brand stands for. So they have a very visionary CEO, a very dynamic board, the executive management team there really are addressing healthcare needs for this community. And so the opportunity is to reposition them from this individual hospital to become a regional healthcare delivery network, a new concept altogether. So how do they do that? Well, it begins with a second hospital in Irvine and embracing that community. But also they have tremendous resources in their centers of excellence, like heart and vascular, neurosciences, orthopedics, as well as multiple other centers, and introducing the concept of Hogue in new communities. So the reality was they wanted to shift the perception from this individual hospital to a much bigger promise. And so that's where we've been helping them. And the work we did was very collaborative throughout the entire organization. There are thousands of employees, physicians, volunteers, the community, the board, other subject matter experts. We really did thorough research, developed this new positioning, and then brought it out to the community. But first, we made sure it was fully adopted internally. I just want to keep stressing that. It's critical that, once again, this new promise is clearly understood internally, and then we can then communicate this message externally. So just one example of one organization evolving.
So, Ray, what's your view? How are companies that you're working with navigating the current economy?
Yeah, I'll give you a different point of view. It comes from a technology point of view. I head up a lot of the technological, and what happens in their marketplace is those models are always changing. I mean, the mergers and acquisitions and the growth patterns for a lot of those technology companies always force them to kind of reevaluate, you know, their value proposition. So although this economy has changed a lot for a lot of the traditional companies, for the technology, when it's reinvention all of the time. So, but the biggest challenge from technology when you're branding technology is that people try to get too much into the overall products, you know, themselves. And what they need to do is to elevate their overall kind of position to something that will, you know, be longer, credible in the marketplace. I think Cisco does, you know, a wonderful, you know, job in doing that. They've came out of just being a, you know, technology company into being a real branded one. So, you know, in Orange County, there's a lot of technology companies. Gosh, we've worked for, well, Linksys, you know, Epicor, Sage, Emulex, all of the technology companies. And it seems even through the 17 years, we worked with them two or three times. So, John, technology is always changing, so they always have to kind of reinvent it. So the point here is you always got to keep that brand relevant. You got to keep it fresh. And sometimes that's messaging changing, but you got to really find a great brand position to own in the marketplace. So technology companies need to rise above the technical jargon and find a great brand promise to invest in.
Outstanding. Very interesting. Alan Warren Buffett once said that it takes 20 years to build a reputation and only 5 minutes to ruin it. When you think about the past year, you think about companies like BP, Toyota, HP, they've certainly experienced their 5 minutes. Give us a recent example of a company that you feel is poorly managing its brand and how Rikus Baird might help solve their challenges.
Well, bad things happen to good companies, regardless of how strong their brands are. Reputation is very fragile. It can be ruined overnight, but I think it's more resilient than we tend to think. A company that has built up a bank of goodwill and credit with the world at large and its customers and its employees can come back quite strongly if it's built on an authentic foundation in terms of what it really stands for. That you mentioned BP. to me, their biggest problem was they overpromised. It was an aspirational attempt to convince the world they were moving beyond their core business, which is oil and petroleum. BP is one of the largest oil majors in the world. Several years it went through a branding program and changed its name from British Petroleum, which communicated all the things it didn't want to communicate, one being it being British when it's now a global company, and petroleum when it's trying to move into upstream and downstream businesses beyond petroleum. So as a way of convincing the world that they were no longer British Petroleum, they thought it was clever to say beyond petroleum and therefore use this mnemonic device to remind people that BP no longer stands for British Petroleum. Well, the problem there was what should have been a temporary campaign around a name change became a slogan and a tagline that really came back to haunt them when they had this disaster in the Gulf with the Deepwater Horizon. Clearly, they are not beyond petroleum. 95% of their revenue comes from oil. They have 10,000 gas stations in the U.S. selling petroleum with BP emblazoned on it. And to say beyond petroleum is a bit of a stretch. And obviously, the press and made hay while the sun shone on that one. There's also the prospect of social media that came into the whole BP situation. There was a Twitter account set up called BP Global PR, which people thought was BP, but it wasn't. It was just somebody having fun with at BP's cost. And that got 180,000 followers during the course of the whole show. And BP were just limping along, trying to catch up, not really understanding that people were deeply worried about this situation and trying to downplay it. Classically did all the wrong things. And finally, the CEO was replaced, and now we have Bob Dudley, an American, who seems to be more in tune with the U.S. market, which is 50% of BP's business, and doing a much better job in terms of turning that company back in terms of its reputation. But nonetheless, BP does have a firm foundation globally in terms of its business performance. And despite the doomsayers and the naysayers about BP's ability to come back, it will come back very strongly.
I think there's a good point, Alan, too, as we talked, and this is something we just discussed on NPR a couple of months ago. For corporations and businesses, from an architecture standpoint, it's a good case study in in brand architecture as being a house of brands. A branded house is a major consideration, for the growth of an organization. For the people that are buying, gas, BP on the East Coast, major affected from the West Coast that are ARCO, do a lot of people know that they're BP? So a lesson to be learned is when you're building your corporate brand, like Ryan had talked about, and finding the position, should you be a branded house or should you be a house of brands? And it all really depends upon your overall business growth strategy, which makes the most sense. And of course, if you put all of your eggs in one basket and there's a tragedy such as, BP, I think we all know what happens.
Well, that's outstanding, gentlemen. We're going to take a quick break and return with more Branding Business right after this.
There's something happening out there today. All across America, we're seeing encouraging signs of economic recovery. Businesses are once again thinking about new growth, and new opportunities are emerging. But it raises the question, is your company positioned to take full advantage of the economic recovery and the opportunities it presents? Maybe it's time to ask, how has the recession impacted your business model? Is your business as relevant as it once was? Should you consider entering new markets or expanding into new categories? And what do customers really value about their relationship with you? The golden thread through all these questions and the answer to each and every one of them can be found in just one place. Your brand. It's much deeper than your logo and much bigger than your advertising. Your brand is the enabler of your entire business strategy. Rikus Baird is a brand strategy firm that can help. They specialize in business branding. They've helped hundreds of companies from startups to Fortune 500 leverage their brands to drive growth. They can do the same for yours. It's really quite simple. Find out more, just visit brandingbusiness.com. That's www.brandingbusiness.com. And plant the seed for economic growth.
Welcome back to Branding Business. Branding Business is sponsored by Rikus Baird, one of the most successful independently owned brand strategy firms focused on branding business. And again, joining me for this inaugural show of Branding Business are the three principals here at Rikus Baird, Ray Baird, Alan Brew, and Ryan Rikus. Ryan, as we begin the new year, there seems to be a bit of cautious optimism among economists and business owners about 2011. Talk for a little bit about how Rikus Baird is helping companies best position themselves for when this economy does rebound.
Sure. Well, I think to begin with, we are seeing renewed optimism, and that's really across all industries. And I think there's a real sense that the worst is behind us. Companies certainly had to deal with that, downsizing. They had a lot of other things that they had to pay attention to, but now companies are thinking about growth again. Alan mentioned the growth in manufacturing. I went to an economic conference this morning, and the financial markets, I think, are also giving both consumers and corporations renewed optimism. The U.S. stocks are up 25% since September, so I think that is helping. Banks are lending again. That didn't occur 2 years ago in the financial meltdown. And I think this entire country and the world would be happy with slow and moderate growth. And it appears we're on that path. Nothing aggressive, but I think your term of cautious optimism is probably appropriate. And I spoke earlier about companies who are basically having to rebrand themselves based upon whether it's political, technology, all kinds of issues and opportunities, and sometimes they are opportunities. So that's what we're seeing across the board is opportunity for companies to rebrand themselves and become more relevant to their target audience. And it really is an opportunity to realign the brand strategy with this new evolved business strategy. So if you want to learn a little bit about how we do that, maybe I can share some insights. It's our belief that we build the brand from the inside out. Usually, the essence of the brand is inside the company already, and or they've already defined how they're going to become relevant to the target audience. The challenge is that they often don't know how to say it, or they have too many things to say, and therefore they deliver a very cluttered message that is not clear to their target audience. So the way we go about that is that our process is very, very involved with the executive team. We do not take on a client that puts us solely into the marketing department. We know we'll not be successful there because, once again, brand strategy is associated to business strategy and needs to be bought in at the highest level with that executive team. We certainly utilize field research that we do ourselves or with some of our research partners to get the internal and external insights that are so critical for the growth, as well as we really kind of take it down to the core foundation and ask the questions, what business are we really in? What category are we in? And sometimes we come up with an entirely new category in order to shift those perceptions to make sure that we're being relevant to our target audience. And sometimes you have to ask yourself, who is our audience? Who is our primary customer? And how has that shifted and how has that changed over the last few years? How do we prepare an offer that is relevant to our customers' needs? How do we get these insights from the marketplace? What are the trends that will affect the business going forward? So these are the things that we look at, we study, and as Alan mentioned, our deep experience in certain categories already helps us with some of those answers. We certainly take a look at the competition out there. Who are they? How are they positioned? In the essence, at the end of the day, what we're trying to do is help our clients clarify their competitive advantage, or in other words, what are the attributes that make them unique? What are the compelling truths? That's another thing that we try to build upon. We look inside the company, find the unique attributes, clarify what we call the compelling truths because they need to be relevant to the target audience, and then build upon those, in essence, ultimately coming up with the brand positioning. And then the other area that we're doing a lot of work on with our corporate clients is the area of helping them develop the core statements of corporate purpose, vision, and mission and values. And obviously, when done well, these are useful to guide the entire company, remain on track with the vision, and then realize a clear destination. But I can tell you it's unsettling the number of executives who, when we ask this question at the beginning of a relationship, give me your vision, we typically don't get a very clear answer. It's usually a 1 to 3 year sales goal or about a 20-minute monologue about what the CEO or the executive team has been thinking about where they want to take their business. So by going through the process I outlined, we can then come back to the client and give them recommendations on what is their true purpose or why do they exist? What is their true vision? What is their destination? And then the mission is how we're going to achieve that destination. So once again, we have the benefit of working with a client executive team over a 3 to 4 month period, look at all that information we found, and then build upon that to claim a unique opportunity for the client and clarify their destination. And of course, as I mentioned before, make sure it's well known internally and then externally as well.
Outstanding. Now, Ray, when a company decides to go through a rebranding process, talk a little bit about some of the things that can go wrong.
Well, there's a lot that can go wrong. First thing is picking the wrong firm to work with. You know, business-to-business branding is, Alan mentioned that, is a lot different from a consumer standpoint. You've got to understand is that it's all based in overall kind of strategy. So you really have got to work with people that understand, you know, the business and the expertise. That's why we chose to, you know, to specialize not only in, you know, branding, but in strategy and in the different verticals. But we're asked this question a bunch. And the first thing is that if the executives are not committed and it's not sponsored from the top, it's usually going to fail because, as Ryan said, it's going to be pushed down in overall marketing. And I can't tell you how many times is that if it makes it just down to overall marketing and it's just another, you know, tagline, it's not our definition of branding business. Branding business is delivering a position that is really truly different in the marketplace that really kind of distinguish you up against the competition. The other thing that happens is, you know, when brand positions are not rooted into, you know, into relevancy, they tend to become really flat. You've got to have overall positions that are new and exciting. And it takes a lot of work to find those things out. Those aren't things that just, you know, you wake up and in the shower, boy, you've got the great idea. So it's got to be rooted in great communication, and it must be linked absolutely to the business strategy. Creating brands that are, you know, disconnected is absolutely terrible. And the third point is that if you do not integrate it into the organization, then it's not going to be operationalized. You must operationalize your brand so that whatever you decide to own in the marketplace for differentiation, every single touch point delivers on that. And employees get excited about that when they understand their contribution and what do they need to do to make it, you know, really distinctive. And you see that in some great brands, you know. You know, FedEx, you know, is a great brand in terms of all the touch points. And in their marketplace, UPS is a great one. You look at, you know, Southwest from a business standpoint. And some of those you could, you know, say that they're consumer-type brands, but they're great corporate brands also that deliver on a really distinctive, you know, overall point of view through all the touch points.
Outstanding. Now, last month, Motorola split into two companies, Motorola Mobility and Motorola Solutions. Now, Alan, I know you've been following this very closely. Talk a little bit about Motorola's approach and whether or not it's a course of action that you would have recommended.
You know, earlier, John, you asked me for an example of a company managing its brand poorly when we were talking about BP and Toyota. They were reacting to circumstances largely beyond their control. With Motorola, you have a company where it is circumstances are entirely within their control, but they're choosing to do something extremely bizarre as far as I can see. Motorola is a manufacturing company, has a great brand in terms of awareness. But if I were to ask people today what was Motorola, people would be hard put to describe what Motorola is as a company. They would probably think of a handset or a cell phone. It has grown and evolved beyond that business. And chosen to split itself up into two independent companies. Well, classically, when a company does that, the parent, the corporate brand, or the legacy brand stays with one part of the business, and the other part of the business takes up a new name. Sara Lee is doing that. Lucent did the same when it spun off from AT&T. Motorola has decided to keep the name Motorola for both businesses, which is breaking the first rule of branding, which is distinction and being distinctive, as Ray said earlier. It's just causing confusion about what Motorola is now. Two separate businesses, two separate sets of customers, two separate sets of marketing initiatives, and the brand is still Motorola. So when we see Motorola, we're not clear now which business they're talking about. And to further complicate the issue for Motorola, they chose to add two entirely generic words to the two new businesses. One is Motorola Mobility, and the other one is Motorola Solutions. Now, there's inherent problems with those words. Mobility is, we think of probably wheelchairs and handicapped mobile solutions for different kinds of mobility. Solutions should have been retired a long time ago from anybody's business vocabulary. To call a business a solutions business when every single business today should be in the solutions business is really just not thinking it through. So we have two businesses, one brand name with two meaningless taglines or subsidiary names, and there's going to be enormous confusion in the marketplace. And I think ultimately one of them will either be acquired or will have to change its name.
Just to add on that point also, for a lot of corporations in the business-to-business arena and branding business, they don't have enough budget to one overall kind of brand, and that, splitting those, mentioning, you have now two separate overall brands that you have to manage, that you have to have, budgets for. For a lot of corporations, you want to have one single focus in that master brand strategy, and they have a great, I think, product reputation. They just miss the opportunity to create a great corporate brand.
Now, Ray, you recently spoke at the conference board in New York, where many of the largest companies in America were represented. Can you give us a quick overview of your presentation and how things went back at the branding and imaging conference?
Yeah, I'm just going to touch on it a little bit because it's going to be the feature of one of these different radio shows here. This client is called Pega Systems. We shorten the name to Pega, actually, and it's a company out of Boston, and it's one of the fastest growing software companies in the world. And I presented with the chief marketing officer Grant Johnson. I've had the pleasure of building about five different brands with him. What made this story really interesting, it's a founder story. And as we mentioned before, you try to go into every organization and find the ethos about where it is. This particular founder, you should go online and check him out, Alan Treffler. And at 19 years old, believe it or not, he was the number one chess champion in the world. Actually, he was set up to play Bobby Fischer before Bobby Fischer did his disappearing act. So you can imagine, the strategy conversations that we had before brand. The major mission was to create a brand that was strong as his overall, technology. So, every time that you think you're a couple of steps ahead of this guy, he was about four or five. And a lot of technology companies are rooted in the vocabulary that they create and the products that they create. But this gentleman, was smart enough to know he's going to take the company, to $1 billion, is that he needs an overall brand. And so they brought in, Grant Johnson to do that, and we started working with him specifically to find out what they could own. And just as a quick sideline, is the big idea that he had, and I think each corporation and business should have a big idea, was to, in the business process management, I know everybody has their categories, BPM, he found a way is to really eliminate, coding from the IT standpoint and put business back in the hands of the overall business leaders. And so it was a fundamentally huge idea that goes up against the monster companies such as SAP and Oracle. So what we did is we worked with the entire executive team to find an overall position that was right for the company. I'm not going to give you all the details now. I'd like you to tune in for another time because we'll focus specifically on that. But it's a wonderful story around a concept that we preach here at Rikus Beard, which is challenger branding. How do you go up against the big guys to take market share, and how do you build a brand that that's going to allow you to break through.
That's outstanding. Now, Alan, you were also in New York at the conference board. What were some of the primary topics discussed there?
Everybody, Ryan made the point earlier about coming out of this most recent economic downturn. There's a combination of issues. One is coming back into the market, and two, reacting to the more natural business cycles that a company goes through. Obviously, a lot of interest around social media. People do want to know the relevance of social media, how they can utilize it, how they should respond to it. Is it a passing fad that they should just ignore, or is it a here to stay and a real channel to market that is has to be reckoned with? A lot of conversations around that. We have a point of view. We'll be dealing with that in another show later in the year. Another one, another issue was employee alignment. We said earlier, employees have been through a tough time. They've seen a lot of their colleagues go. Their loyalty to the company has been questioned. They're really confused about what a company stands for these days and where it's going. And you know, what we saw was a lot of concern about re-engaging with employees, recommitting to employees and embracing them into a plan forward in terms of where the company is going and how it can really convince them that they have a future, the company has a future, and to give them a glimpse of a real growth future.
Outstanding. Now, Verizon recently announced that it will carry the iPhone beginning this month in February, a few days. Many iPhone users rejoice at this news, and there seems to be a very strong perception out there that there are a large number of iPhone users who are unhappy with the current exclusive carrier, AT&T. So, Alan, I'm going to ask you, if you are AT&T, how would you combat this Verizon news and improve your brand?
It's an easy question, right?
Yeah, absolutely, and I'm going to answer it very pithily. You know, the problem, AT&T has bigger problems than the iPhone. They were handed a gift several years ago by Apple. They were handed this object of desire that people wanted, and many people did the thing that all cell phone companies dread, which is changing carriers. People changed carriers. They went to AT&T to get the iPhone, and now the game has changed again. Verizon have the iPhone, so AT&T are going to find that this gift they had, which did improve their cellular business, is no longer exclusive. Their problems will remain. Again, this goes back to the point about product innovation. Product innovation will never get you out of a long-term business fix. AT&T has huge problems in terms of its business model and its brand, in terms of its legacy perception on business. It's a little bit like the British Empire. Once it ruled the world, and it still hasn't found a role now, doesn't rule the world. What is AT&T? The cellular business is flattening. Its fixed line business, the landline business, is on a steep decline. It is now trying to get into new products and services, into content through fiber and broadband to offer content to the home. And it's simply looking for a way forward to grow. And over the last 10, 15 years, it's been through several CEOs who've tried and failed to find a relevant path forward for AT&T. So goodness knows what AT&T will end up being. But the iPhone was a temporary Band-Aid.
Well, Ryan, my last question is for you. Okay. Ricus Baird has a rich heritage in Southern California, but also works with many national and international companies and has offices in both coasts, California and New York. How are your nationally known clients, American Airlines, Constellation Energy, just to name a few, approaching 2011?
Well, first off, we are in the service business, so we opened the New York office to be closer to our East Coast clients and have a presence there. And at the same time, no matter where the client's located, they're typically doing business nationally or in most cases internationally. So we're seeing a greater emphasis on their corporate brand clarity and the consistency that's delivered at an international level. At the same time, they're also realizing that the brand must be relevant on a local level, and in other words, how the brand is experienced. And in many cases, that brand experience is seen online. And so we're seeing marketing budgets shift from traditional media to online media, and a greater emphasis on what we call online brand reputation and how their brand is experienced and communicated. And if they're not part of the conversation, they're missing out. So that's the benefit of social media. And we're seeing a significant increase in that focus. And it starts with education. So we're helping our clients become more educated in the area of social media. We're helping them join the conversation. And I think there's a real benefit to business today through social media, and that is that you can get real-time learning. You can get feedback. You can get data. You can get insights from the customers if you're only willing to listen to them. And that ultimately can obviously be a significant benefit as you evolve and be able to react to their growing needs. So those are just a couple of trends that we're seeing on a local, national, international level.
Well, outstanding. Ray Baird, Alan Brew, Ryan Rikus, the three principals of Rikus Baird, thank you for joining me on the inaugural show of Branding Business. And thank you for listening to Branding Business with Rikus Baird. Our next program will feature Deborah Legan, the Vice President of Marketing and Communications at Hoag Hospital. So be sure to join us. Archive broadcasts of Branding Business are available at www.brandingbusiness.com. And if you have a question that you'd like to ask one of these three principals at Rikus Baird, you can reach them at 949-586-1200. That's 949-586-1200. Or by email at info@rikusbaird.com. That's info@rikusbaird.com.
You've been listening to Branding Business, the only show that brings branding experts and corporate executives together to explore how branding your business can improve both your top-line growth and bottom-line performance. To hear more, simply visit our website, brandingbusiness.com, or tune in next week to learn how you, too, can build your brand and move your business forward. Brought to you by Rikus Baird.